Jambase Podcast, a proud member of the Osiris Podcast Network. My name is Scott Bernstein, and we'll start off with the rundown of recent news stories, and then we'll hear the Art of the Sit-In chat with Jennifer Hartswick. But first, let's take care of a little business, as this episode is sponsored by SiriusXM. You may already know that SiriusXM brings you the deepest variety of commercial-free music for every genre and for every mood, where you hear the biggest names in talk, entertainment, and comedy, and hundreds of handcrafted music channels designed to fit every mood, where you get news from every source and you can listen to the newly launched Fish Radio, in addition to Jam On, Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, Tom Petty Radio, and many others, where you can listen to top comedy channels like Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Radio and Netflix's Joke Radio, and sports talk radio from Barstool to ESPN, and many more to keep you up to date on the latest news in the sports world. Most people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. Subscribe now to listen outside the car, on your phone, online, and at home, and get your first 3 months for just a dollar. Visit SiriusXM.com/Jambase to see offer details and to subscribe and start listening today. SiriusXM, no car required. Alrighty, so joining me once again today is longtime Jambase contributor, Chad Bernson. How's it going, Chad?
Good to be back, Scotty. Thanks.
There's lots to discuss for this installment of the Rundown, so let's get into it. Chad, the past few weeks have been filled with tour date announcements galore. Can you fill us in on some of them?
Absolutely. So let's start off with Bob Dylan, who will continue his never-ending tour in the U.S. this fall. So far, Bob has announced dates spanning October the 11th through November the 20th, with promise of more to come. He's got appearances set on both coasts and a big swing through the Midwest. Then there's the Marcus King Band, who will embark on the El Dorado Tour between Halloween and December 21st, including some of their biggest headlining appearances yet. Speaking of big headlining appearances, Vampire Weekend used the opportunity of their headlining debut at Madison Square Garden here in New York City to announce a 2020 tour. And our old pal Bruce Hornsby also announced a batch of solo dates slated for March 2020. And Dead & Company expanded their fall fun run with a pair of shows at Nassau Coliseum on Long Island, November 5th and 6th. Big Head Todd and the Monsters look ahead to 2020 with a cross-country winter tour, and the Wood Brothers announced both late 2019 dates and early 2020 dates. A lot going on. Also of note, Steely Dan, who expanded their current tour into the last days of December. And speaking of December, and what has now become a tradition, the Tedeschi Trucks Band will close out their touring year once again at Boston's Orpheum Theater from December 5th through 7th. Elsewhere, kind of a light touring year for Ween, but it now includes shows in Boston on December 13th and Philadelphia on December 14th. Another big announcement came from Phish bassist Mike Gordon, who will take his five-piece on the road early next year for a 13-show winter tour. Additionally, Wilco will revive their Winterlude residency in Chicago for four shows between December 15th and 18th. Finally, New Year's Run announcements have been coming in at a fast and furious pace. Les Claypool, Billy Strings, Fruition, Turquoise, Tyler Childers, Two Bob Crew, Yonder Mountain String Band, Keller Williams, Moe, and Lettuce are among the acts who revealed their end-of-year plans since our last episode. A lot to do, Scott.
Oh, my God. There is so much out there. Go see live music, everybody. Unfortunately, there's been some more somber news as well, and this seems to be happening every episode, and hope one episode we don't have to deal with those who have passed away. But there are actually three major musicians who died since our last episode. Acclaimed singer-songwriter Daniel Johnston died on September 11th at his home in Waller, Texas. Johnston was a musician's musician whose songs have been covered by a who's who of acts such as Wilco, Tom Waits, Beck, Bright Eyes, Death Cab for Cutie, and many others. The Sacramento native was raised in West Virginia and eventually moved to Austin, where he became known for his lo-fi cassette tapes of original songs that he started creating and sharing several years later in the 80s. And we highly recommend the 2005 documentary, The Devil and Daniel Johnston, for a look at his career like none other. Johnston retired from touring in 2017, and his final five-show tour featured the Prez Hall Jazz Band, Jeff Tweedy, Built to Spill, The Districts, and Modern Baseball serving as backing bands at various stops. Music World lost another great on September 15th when the Cars frontman Rick Ocasek died at the age of 75. The Cars were recently inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2018, and for good reason. The band were at the forefront of the new wave movement and scored one hit after another with such Ocasek pen songs as Shake It Up, Just What I Needed, Magic, and You Might Think. Cars first gained prominence in the late 70s and adapted well to the MTV era with their wild music videos. The band broke up in 1988. Bassist Benjamin Orr died in 2000. The surviving members went on to reunite and in 2011 released what will most certainly be their final album, Move Like This. Finally, hitmaker Eddie Money succumbed to cancer on September 13th at age 70. Money first found fame in the mid-1970s with a string of hits that included Baby Hold On and Two Tickets to Paradise, two songs that are staples of classic rock radio. He had a comeback of sorts in the mid-1980s with his biggest hit yet, Take Me Home Tonight, which brought the legendary vocalist Ronnie Spector back into the spotlight as well. Chad, let's bring up the mood. What else is going on?
Well, another thing that caught our eye this week is that a documentary film about Medeski, Martin, and Wood will premiere at the Woodstock Film Festival in upstate New York. Directed by Jason Miller, Not Jazz, love that title, will be screened on October 4th at the Woodstock Bearsville Theater and on October 5th at Upstate Films in Rhinebeck. The documentary captures John Medeski, Billy Martin, and Chris Wood recording a new album at Allaire Studios in Shokan, New York. Martin shared a series of Instagram posts from the recording sessions nearly 2 years ago, so I think it's safe to say we've been anxiously awaiting new output from the M, the M, and the W.
Bring it on.
Billy Martin and Jason Miller will be appearing at the Bearsville Theater for a Q&A as part of that show, and Martin is also slated to perform solo. Scotty, it's that time of year where every weekend feels chock full of events. Special run of shows this past weekend. Tell us about it.
Absolutely, and in a sign of just how big Green Sky Bluegrass has become, the band played three nights at Red Rocks, spanning September 13th through 15th. Green Sky selected the Little Smokies to open on the 13th, Raylan Baxter as support on the 14th, and Billy Strings, who was making his Red Rocks debut, and to be fair, the Little Smokies also made their Red Rocks debut, to kick off the action on the final night, Sunday the 15th. And in true Green Sky fashion, the quintet loaded the set list with surprises and had each of the opening acts sit in. Friday's concert saw the Little Smokies fiddler Jake Simpson guest with Green Sky for a few tunes, and the night came to a close with both bands collaborating on Peter Rowan's Midnight Moonlight. Then, Green Sky welcomed Raylan Baxter on Saturday for a performance of his own Yellow Eyes, a song that Green Sky has performed themselves a number of times. And then Sunday's finale saw Billy Strings add to I'd Probably Kill You, which now has been adapted to include a line about Billy Strings.
I burned the house down, I'm somehow sure that Billy Strings was in there.
And Strings, as well as members of his band, joined in for a well-jammed Don't Lie that included Billy's own Meet Me in the Creek in the middle. I have a feeling it won't be long until Billy Strings is headlining Red Rocks. Chad, can you give us a little preview of a feature for Jambase that you're working on?
Absolutely, and boy, this does feel like a seminal moment. And to touch back on Green Sky, I mean, you and I both remember seeing them in shoebox-sized places not that long ago, and it feels like it's Billy's moment soon as well, on the way up. And, you know, Scotty, it was my absolute pleasure to interview Billy for an upcoming feature that'll publish on Jambase, as you said. Billy has been absolutely everywhere lately, sitting in with everyone from Widespread Panic and obviously Green Sky to Del McCurry, String Cheese Incident, and others. He has a new album coming out called Home, and it's his most assured recorded statement yet as an artist. But I think, you know, Scott, what I've really enjoyed is watching him continue to come into his own as a live performer. He can own a stage now, and I won't give too much away, but we talked in detail about where his collaborative spirit comes from and how he approaches being a very inclusive band leader and trying to stay true to the spirit of the bluegrass festivals he grew up going to, where people who barely know one another or don't know one another can find common ground really quickly among musical language and jam as a result. It was a terrific chat, and we can't wait to get it out there.
Excellent. You'll be looking for that probably towards the end of the month. And what I love is that Billy has there is so in demand. I mean, he played a set with Bela Fleck the other day in Nashville. Jason Isbell is always commenting on Billy's Instagram. I mean, us here in the jam scene are not the only ones to recognize the greatness of this kid. And so it's really exciting to see his rise. And Chad, you had a chance to see Dave Matthews Band serve as the second ever act to play the brand new Chase Center in San Francisco. Can you tell us a little bit about the show?
Oh man, well, I, like many a suburban youth, Dave, and we all called him Dave, like we knew him personally, was a big part of my concert upbringing and kind of a gateway to a galaxy of other bands I now, some years later, count among my favorites. And I don't see DMB much anymore, but they're a band I check in on every once in a while to find out if those vibes are still there and just, you know, what a band I listened to through my high school years is doing now. Can they still deliver like what, at least in my younger days and my formed musical mind at the time, they once did. I think what's fascinating in recent tours for Dave Matthews Band is how, you know, they've adapted to what, as we know, in 2018 was a major lineup change with the departure of violinist Boyd Tinsley. There are still songs in the DMB repertoire that, I, you know, to me, just sound a little strange without that signature violin, but the band's taken these longtime concert warhorses like Tripping Billies and Louisiana Bayou and Jimmy Thing, all played in San Francisco, by the way, great set. They take them in different directions, and I think there's still a great willingness on the part of the band to experiment. The remaining core of Dave, Stefan Lessard and Carter are still potent, and then the supporting players, Tim Reynolds, Jeff Coffin, Rashawn Ross, Buddy Strong, these are monster musicians, and they really go in and go be well and beyond what they might be doing as mere sidemen and carve these tunes up from the inside out. It's a big sound, Scott, you know, befitting a band that's been playing large venues for a long time now and has never really needed to scale back or change its essential formula, but now approaches things with a different instrumentation. A lot of highlights. Lie in Our Graves is an old DMB favorite for me, and this one had a big built-up Tim Reynolds solo at the heart of it. But the whole show was a lot of fun. It had some really nifty surprises. And yeah, you mentioned the Chase Center. Definitely going to be an interesting addition to the Bay Area scene. It's already busy. Eric Clapton followed one night later after Dave with Carlos Santana sitting in. It's been christened. Good times.
I'm excited to see that venue personally and see what it's all about. It's not every day they plop a new arena in the middle of San Francisco. There's a busy few weeks of music coming up for both of us. I'm excited myself, speaking of San Francisco, to head out to California this weekend to catch Yola Tango's multi-band event in Big Sur on Friday and Saturday, and then the final day of this year's Mountain Soul Music Festival in Santa Cruz. I've never been to both of those places. Can't wait to check them out. Another date that is circled on my calendar is that I'm going to see a live taping of Chris Thiele's Live From Here on October 12th at the venue's new home of Town Hall here in New York City. It's part of a triple header in which I plan to hit Wilco at Radio City and Perpetual Groove at the Gramercy Theater as well. Thiele's done a remarkable job in taking over as host, adding his own spin to it for what was once Prairie Home Companion. Have you had a chance to see a Live From Here taping, Chad?
I have had the pleasure on multiple occasions, and you're in for a treat, my man. That's quite a dance card you have. We're spoiled now here in New York City, I mean, for many reasons, but we get so much of you know, Live From Here for ourselves. But Chris Thiele, you know, really has done such a remarkable job keeping the eclectic and kind of goofy charm of a Prairie Home Companion alive while making it a decidedly different experience. It's very much his show now. And what I love about it most is that it draws in musicians and comedians from all over. And I mean, just look at some of these lineups. But it's more than that. Somehow they're free to be themselves. You know, they interact with Chris and the house band and always, you know, depending on their personalities and their backgrounds and what they bring to the table, they seem to relax and let themselves be totally charmed by the experience. And I've had rich experiences at Live From Here with musicians from all over the world that I may have heard of or that I may not have heard of, and either way would never have really sought out on my own, at least in that context. And Trey will be returning to the show in a few weeks. Should be a blast, but all of them are good. It's really a show where all of them are good. Highly recommended.
Absolutely. And any other shows coming up for you, Chad?
Busy end of the month, as you definitely know, Scotty. Government Mule is one of my favorite bands, and just for whatever scheduling quirks have made it difficult to do so this year. I haven't seen them this year yet.
Wow.
I will be catching up with what's already a really tasty-looking Mule Fall Tour in Chicago next week. After that, looks like I will be in the house right at the end of September for Wolfpack at Madison Square Garden. I've seen Wolfpack a bunch of times with varying experiences at different types of venues, but I have to admit I'm really curious about what they're going to pull out for their debut at the Garden. A ballsy choice for a band on the way up, and one that they appear to have sold out.
Amazing.
Looking forward to it. But after that, I mean, you know, October, Scotty, is looking like a monster month for sure.
Rocktober.
But we'll finish out September, not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Amen to that. And that's it for the rundown. But now, before we get to the art of the sit-in chat with Jennifer Hartswick, a reminder that this episode is sponsored by SiriusXM. Already know that SiriusXM brings you the deepest variety of commercial-free music for every genre and every mood, where you hear the biggest names in talk, entertainment, and comedy, and hundreds of hand-curated music channels designed to fit every mood, and where you get news from every source, where you can listen to the newly launched Fish Radio in addition to Jam On, Dave Matthews Band Radio, Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, and many more. And there's comedy channels from Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud to Netflix is a Joke. If sports fans, you've got Barstool, you've got ESPN, and many more to keep you up to date on the latest news in the sports world. Most people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. Subscribe now to listen outside the car, on your phone, online, and at home, and get your first 3 months for just a dollar. Visit SiriusXM.com/Jambase to see offer details and to subscribe. Start listening today. SiriusXM, no car required. Now, here's Jeha.
Shadows, I see the things you hide from me, the rage that fuels your beating heart, the torment in your eyes.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for listening to the Jambase podcast. I'm Scott Bernstein, and today I'm here with Jennifer Hartswick at the Music Hall of Williamsburg, where she will soon take the stage with Nick Casarino to open for the Nth Power. How's it going, Jennifer?
Hello!
We're going to talk the art of the sit-in. And there aren't many musicians out there that are better qualified to discuss this subject. Jennifer has made guest appearances with nearly every major act in our scene and has welcomed plenty of musicians to share the stage with her and her various projects as well. Jenna, a recent sit-in that took place went down at Lock-In, where Derek Trucks performed a set with the Trey Anastasio Band. And for those of you who don't know, Jennifer's been a member of the group since 2001. Can you tell us a little bit about the preparation that went into that set?
I prepared very hard for that. That's not what you mean, is it? We were so stoked to have Derek with us. He's been Trey's favorite living guitar player for a really long time, and we've been trying to get that to happen for quite some time. So, you know, and it's funny, people kind of assume that these things just happen, or in our scene, there's not a lot of preparation that sometimes goes on, but that's really not how Trey rolls. He really likes to be prepared and rehearse and all that kind of stuff. So he chose, I think he chose the stuff that he thought would best suit Derek, and they had countless phone conversations, and then we had a full day of rehearsal in New York right before Lock-In, and which is great. And then Susan came and worked on a couple songs with everybody, and you know, so like a lot of preparation went into it, but I thought it was great. I loved having them. I loved playing with them. I loved hanging out with them, and people seemed pretty stoked with the result. So,
and was it just Trey's decision about what songs were played? And
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, he knows better than anybody, you know, right. And I think he just picked the ones that he thought Derek would really get a chance to shine on.
And I really liked what he chose for Susan to sing
as
well.
Yeah, we liked that too. Man, we were, like I said, we had this rehearsal in New York, and she came and started to sing the that Ghost of the Forest song. Help me out. What is that called?
Life Beyond the Dream.
And the first, she sang the first line of it, and I had such intense goosebumps. I looked over at Natalie, and she was showing me her arm, and I was showing her my arm. It's like, oh man. And it was originally supposed to be sort of like a line by line duet between her and Trey.
Okay.
And then it was like, can she just sing it? It's so good when she sings it.
Now I'm letting it all roll by. I can't see a life beyond the dream. Watching it all roll by, I can't see
and then just, you know, working on harmonies for stuff. It's just she's an incredible singer and a great woman, and we had a total blast.
And I loved that it wasn't like she had some sheet music in front of her. I mean, she seemed to really embody the song and knew the lyrics.
Yeah.
And again, as you talked about, in our scene, that isn't something that always happens.
No, I will encourage everyone to please do that.
Yes.
I'm begging you. The more work that you put into it. I mean, it's important. Like, this is our job. And, like, you wouldn't go to your job totally unprepared. You know, there are certain things that are going to happen where, like, oh, so-and-so's in town and they just show up at the gig. Like, that's one thing. But for the most part, you got a couple hours to prepare. Like, do something worthy. Do something cool. Think about it. Just put a little thought into it. What would make this super cool, you know?
Yeah.
So I encourage people to take a little time and think about what would be the best situation.
And were there songs that were prepared that you guys were prepared to play that didn't make the cut?
Oh, probably.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, the set was really long.
Exactly. But
I think, you know, we prepared too many songs for various reasons. I'm sure they didn't all get played, but
I thought Spin would in particular have been a good one.
We prepared Spin.
Okay.
Yeah. We didn't play that?
No, it did not make the set list.
Yeah, that was one that was on the list.
Was there any talk of covers at any point, or was it always going to be?
Nope.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I guess Trey had plenty of covers to play the next night when he sat in with the Tedeschi Trucks Band and played all of Layla and Assorted Love Songs, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it went down the way it did.
Yeah.
One of my favorite guest appearances that you made was on Halloween 2006 in Las Vegas, when you sang with Solis, and who was the other vocalist that joined you?
Oh, Joe Lampert. Yeah.
Joe Lampert.
Yeah.
And that was, you guys did The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and The Spiders from Mars. Can you tell us a little bit about how you were brought into that?
Yeah. Fish had made that decision pretty early on in the year, it seems, again, a band that really likes to rehearse.
Yeah.
Thank you. And they had brought in Carmel Dean, who's was his musical director for Hands on a Hard Body, and to sort of work on the vocal arrangements and find a couple singers to really round out the night. And she said, you know, I have these two that are perfect, Solis and Joe, they're perfect, and you know, I could really use a third. And Trey just lit up, and he said, what about Jen? And she was like, oh my God, Jen! Oh, yeah! So we all met, same rehearsal spot that we rehearsed with Derek and Susan.
Okay.
And so we met, I don't know, maybe a month before the show, and ran through everything, and just had such a vibe that, you know, that we carry to this day, and I love Solis. I love Joe. They're amazing singers and songwriters in their own right, and musicians. And so, you know, we rehearsed for a good month before that happened.
Wow, was that long?
Yeah.
So they really put in the work for that.
Yeah.
And
you'll find this is a theme,
yes.
Scotty B.
Oh no, love, you're not alone. No matter where you've been,
And was there a rehearsal in Vegas before you actually went ahead and took the stage and performed?
Now you're asking me to remember things. I think maybe just a real long sound check.
Okay.
There might have been a rehearsal.
And was that your first time meeting Solis?
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. And she's gone on to perform with you and Nick. And
yep, us and Ghost of the Forest and all the things. Yeah, we love having her around.
And yeah. Talk about rehearsal for the Ghost of the Forest. I would imagine
lots
went into that.
A lot. It was a total pleasure. But yeah, a lot of work.
And I really enjoyed, and I know we're getting a little off topic here, but this is our podcast, and we could
What's
do what
the
we
topic?
Want.
The I want to talk. Right, I know, but like it's suggested. There's exactly. like an asterisk with another yeah. asterisk that's like whatever the hell we want to talk about. I would like to talk about what we're looking at for the wallpaper right now. I wish that people could see this. It's Barbara Streisand a zillion times over, and it says "Hello, gorgeous." a lot. Anyway, that's what I wanted to talk
Very
about. That's my asterisk.
Brooklyn, New York City type of thing.
It's awesome. But I'll take a picture and post it.
There you go. And I saw the first Ghost of the Forest show in Portland.
Yeah, you did.
A good friend suggested that I be there, and yep. I appreciated that.
Yep, she must be awesome. That's smart.
And it was intense. It was an intense experience not knowing any of that material. I've been a Phish fan for 25 years, a Trey fan for that long, and I'm so familiar with his stuff. It was such a cool experience to hear 2 hours of material I had never heard before.
Yeah.
But what was interesting to me is I wound up seeing 3 shows, and the second show I saw was about 2 weeks later in New York City. And I really felt, whereas the first night, it felt like you guys were going to try to nail the material as best you could. Whereas 2 weeks later, it felt like you were inside
yeah.
the material.
Yeah, totally fair assessment. You know, you can rehearse it and rehearse it and rehearse it. And then once you perform it, it becomes different. You know, you have that experience to draw from and the experiences that happened in between those shows, however many of the shows there were between Portland and New York City, you know. But yeah, I mean, you're used to sort of hearing material that's been worked on for 25 years yeah. or 4 years or whatever it is, but usually not a month or 6 weeks or whatever. So, you know, we're feeling it out and a song has a total lifespan as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't know when the end of the life is, but it's, ooh, hello, bass. Can you guys hear what's happening down below us? you know, but there is, it's like, you get to know it. You get, it's a relationship. You get to know it just like you get to know a person and together collectively. I mean, as a band, you also saw the birth of a band that had never played a gig before. So not only are you seeing 2 hours of new material, you're seeing a band that doesn't exist.
Right.
And so we're all getting to know each other in that sense. And so that's fun, and watching the music evolve is fun, and I think by the end of it, I mean, my favorite show was the LA Greek, you know, and some people's favorite, I think Trey's favorite was the next night, but, you know, my favorite for whatever reason was the second to last one, and I felt like we really were in it at that point, yeah. just in time to be done with it.
It seemed like the California shows were like a victory lap
yeah,
of sorts.
Yeah, yeah, I would say that, yeah, yeah.
And another, you know, let's go to the other side of things and where you bring together other musicians. This past January on Jam Cruise 17, you hosted the Super Jam. And for those unfamiliar, Jam Cruise hosts a Super Jam the final afternoon of the final full day of the trip every year. It's a different host every year. And how did you go about, let's start with deciding what you were going to play?
Yeah, I think for me, first of all, there was a concept that I wanted to execute. I think the Super Jam has become so normal for us in our scene. It's like, I'm not sure what the fascination is. I'm just going to be totally honest. I don't know why people want to see over and over and over again, like a bunch of people who are unrehearsed and like just getting together to jam. I understand that like cool special things happen, but I also know that it's really cool to be in a band who like really cares about what they're doing. And so I have turned down the Jam Cruise Super Jam a lot. And this time I thought, well, it's an opportunity to do something different and from your average Super Jam. A Super Jam can literally be a person hosting it and a bunch of people and a guy saying, how about funk in A? And that happens for 90 minutes. And to me, that's sort of like a wasted opportunity. Again, if you had put some thought into it and some care into it, maybe you could have come up with something more creative and cooler for these people who were stoked about this set. And so I took it on as sort of like, okay, well, if I was out there, what would I want to see? I would want to see great songs with great musicians who know what they're doing. And so I used it as an opportunity. I thought, we have 90 minutes. Let me make 8 different bands. And so everybody had one song. And everybody got a chance to shine and have their moment. And all the singers got to sing. And people got to take solos. But it wasn't like, oh, wow, this song has been going on for 48 minutes. And so we did. We did it entirely. And it was, you know, well executed and well rehearsed. And we rehearsed for an entire day where, like, the schedule was, okay, you come from 12 to 12:25, you know, and you come, this band rehearses from 12:30 to 12:50, and this band rehearses, and we just kept it moving. And that way it's not overwhelming for people, too. It's like, oh, I only have to do one song? Great.
Yeah, that's a good call.
But it's also interesting, you know, yeah. And we had really cool bands. And so that's kind of how I approached it. And I wanted to pick music that made sense for who was going to sing it and play it. And, you know, there was a lot that went into it. So, but I think it's cool. I think it was cool the way it came off.
Agree to somebody that was in the audience. And did you have the game plan in terms of music, these bands that you put together coming into before the boat left?
Oh yeah.
And connected with all the people, because it is crazy.
We connect with people a month out,
that's,
you know,
a good call.
And see what their schedule is and has become, and you know, and yeah, no, a lot of thought goes into it. So I started making fake bands in my mind, you know, a month out, and said, oh, you know, Lyle would sound great on this, like, you know, whatever. It comes together in the last minute, but a lot of thought goes into it so that we can do that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And speaking of Jam Cruise, you also played a set with Nick.
Yeah.
And while we're here at the Music Hall of Williamsburg, where you'll be opening for The Nth Power, a band that you had a big hand in putting together, Nikki came out and played a song with you.
On the boat.
And could you tell us a little bit about your experience with that?
I'm going to start by saying, I wonder if she remembers that. This was, in the lounge, in some sort of like jazz lounge setting, and it was just Nick and me. And she had never seen the duo either. You know, it's like when the Nth Power is off tour, she's off doing, she's with Maceo or whatever. So we never connect, you know, she's never seen the duo. So she came down in her slippers and there was a drum set up on stage, just like a backline drum set. And so he said, man, come up here, come on up. And so she came up, she had no sticks and no shoes on, and managed to play a whole song, probably with a blood alcohol level of I don't know what, but it was late and she was off, and damn it, she's allowed. But yeah, that's what I remember from that, was that she's like, I don't have shoes on or sticks.
Yeah,
and she couldn't find sticks,
and she made do without sticks.
She don't need no sticks.
No, it was a cover of Paul Simon's Under African Skies. you played, do you recall if you had played that before? Was that new for you?
Nick and I have played that before.
Okay.
But never with a stickless drummer.
Sure.
A shoeless, stickless drummer.
It's very cool. You have a long relationship with Umphrey's McGee that at this point dates back nearly 20 years. And you've sat in with them a lot. Is there any of the sit-ins that stand out to you as particularly among your favorites?
Man, we've done a lot of stuff. I think the last two Red Rocks sit-ins probably kind of pop out to me. I mean, Joel approached me about doing that Rush song like almost a year in advance.
Oh, wow.
I was like, someday we're going to do this. And then someday it turned out to be, hey, what are you doing in 2 weeks or something, you know? And that Red Barchetta song that's got 70,000 lyrics that make no sense.
Thank
weird,
you, Neil Peart.
Weird bars of seven. And yeah, so that was like, that was trippy. You want to talk about a lot of preparation.
Yeah, so
man.
Let's talk about that. How much went into that?
Oh my God. A lot. Maybe more than anything I've ever prepared for.
Wow.
Because there's things that feel normal to you and like, okay, this is in my wheelhouse, and that was beyond not one of them. Like, I mean, I've never heard the song before, and I think there's probably like 8 people in the audience who knew the song.
Right.
The rest of people were like, what the hell is this? But, you know, and then so my response to that song was, why don't you ever let me sing a song that's sung by a girl? And my suggestion was Total Eclipse of the Heart. I was like, can I just do something that's like funny, like a female song where we don't have to change the key and whatever. So I suggested it, and it was met with a lot of giggles, but not a lot of yes.
Oh, okay.
And then the giggles changed from giggles to, oh man, this would be really great. Okay, let's just do it. So
less rehearsal for that than
less rehearsal in my wheelhouse. I was born in 1980. Yeah. Like that's, you know, that's like in my sleep kind of stuff. I think Rush is in their sleep.
Yeah,
I think
that's
like
a good point.
But I didn't. I like grow up like raging in a garage band with a like, because I'm never like a 13-year-old boy, so I never got bitten by the Rush bug. But
I gotta say my favorite was Barracuda.
Oh yeah, that's a good one too. I like that one.
And I feel like when we had first met and hung out and talked about you potentially playing with Umphrey's, it was a song that you and I had talked about, and it was took about 5 years before it actually happened.
Yeah,
was,
well, I just knew that they would crush it so hard. Yeah. Like that's also in their wheelhouse. Yeah, no, that's a good one. I should bring that back. Maybe in Iceland.
Ooh.
Hey.
There you go.
We got to do something.
We're talking. Yeah. You've been playing a lot with Othiel and friends.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about, and right now there's the drum sound check going on. So hopefully you guys aren't hearing too much of that. But let's take the example of the New Year's run that you did with Othiel and friends this past year. How much preparation goes into that, and what kind of preparation is it?
That's far less preparation, I think, because, you know, a lot of people know that material pretty well. The Othiel show that we just did at Lock-In was more preparation because it was some of his music mixed in, which I'm super grateful for. He wanted to do some sort of everybody's music and not just the Dead music. So there was a little bit more rehearsal for Lock-In than the New Year's run. But he prepares well too. He sends out an email to, you know, all of us weeks before the thing. And
okay.
Here's what I want to do, and here's versions with horns and without horns, and, you know, we got to figure out like when we're going to play and when we're going to sing, and a lot of times they're at the same time and there's a lot of back and forth. Which do you need more? Do you need singers or do you need the horn parts? You know, and it's always different. I always think it's going to be one thing, and he's like, oh no, definitely. Oh, all right. This is why we talk. So yeah.
And by talk, is it actually talking or emails?
Yeah, no, it's talking. With stuff like that, it's talking. It's just easier.
And soon you'll be playing some shows with Melvin and the JGB.
Yeah.
So it really had been it took a while for you to really be doing the Dead and Jerry stuff. Are there any songs in particular that now that you've had some time to be performing that canon repertoire of stuff that particularly resonate for you?
I think more so than anything, like I think Broke Down Palace is such an incredibly well-written song. I think that's probably my favorite song to sing of like the entire repertoire. But I'm always, you know, it's always cool to learn new stuff. And, you know, Melvin does primarily Jerry Band stuff, so that'll be different than what I do with O'Teal. And, you know, and we've talked about how to make it different and how, you know, what songs that I might bring to the table that haven't been brought to the table before.
Oh,
so it should be
cool.
An interesting little run.
Right. And, you know, going back to Jam Cruise, you did a set, Melvin's piano set, you sat in with him on a few songs, and that was just so super cool.
I love the way that Melvin plays.
Yep.
I don't care what he's playing. He could be playing like Hot Cross Buns, and I'd be like, damn, that's the best Hot Cross Buns I've ever heard. Like his spirit, I think he's an incredible organist. You know, James Casey was on that O'Teal and Friends set for Lock-In, and he'd never played with Melvin, actually, or O'Teal, which is crazy. Like, for a second, he's played with O'Teal, but not, like, you know, a full gig with him.
Right.
And man, Melvin started taking, like, a total church solo, and I've never seen James Casey that happy on stage in my whole life. He was like yelling at him, like waving his hat at him and stuff. I was like, who are you right now? Like, if you move James Casey like that, you are legit.
Doing it right. Very cool. Another sit-in that was very special that I had the opportunity to see was about a year ago at Rockwood Music Hall, which is a tiny venue here in New York City.
Yeah.
You had the opportunity to play with one of your heroes, Christian McBride.
Yes, sir.
And your boss, Trey
Anastasio. Yeah, boss man.
Can you tell us a little bit about how that came together?
Sure. So, I got chastised by my beautiful redheaded boss because when I come to New York and play with Nick, he says that I don't tell him, and it made him sad.
Aww.
And I was like, listen, my friend, you cannot come to the kinds of places that we are playing. They're like 80 person listening rooms. Like, they're, you just, you know, it's not really feasible for you. And he folded his arms and said, I can go anywhere I want. You can't tell me that, whatever. So I said, all right. And so we had this gig booked at Rockwood, and Christian saw that we were playing. He said, hey, can I come play?
Like,
that's a question you never have to ask. Yes, you may come play, Christian McBride. And then, so just to be kind of an asshole, I called Trey and I said, hey, just so you know, next week Nick and I are playing in New York, and I'm letting you know because I told you that I would. And Christian's gonna get up and play a couple songs, and I'm just inviting you to A, come, or B, obviously play if that's something you want to do. Or so there you have it. I told you that we're playing, and I totally expected him to be like, thank you so much, have the best time.
Yeah.
And then that's it. And then he called me the next day. He said, I'm coming. I said, okay. I said, you want to play? Yeah.
Awesome.
I would love to. Thank you so much for asking. So so that's how it happened. And you know, Rockwood is this, if you've never been to Rockwood, there's usually like 6 shows a night. Some people get like 35 minutes. I mean, it's like set by set by set by set.
It's
like it's a real throw-and-go situation. There's no such thing as a sound check. And in between every band, you have to get on and off stage in less than 10 minutes. I mean, it's like nowhere else but New York City.
Yeah.
Does this happen?
So
P.S.
regimented.
Like, it's whatever. It is what it is. So anyway, we had the last set of the night, and they ended up clearing the entire place out. I didn't even know that there's a curtain that goes to the street, but like that whole like glass wall that faces the street, there's a red velvet curtain that goes all the way across so you can't see in. And so they pulled that. I was like, get out. I've been here 1,000 times. I've never seen that before. They cleared everybody out, pulled that curtain. He came in with his teeny little amp and set up and was playing with knobs and sound checked a song and had a little cheat sheet of all of our music as you know, originals that we had written, and then we hit him up in the balcony with Christian and let everybody else back in, and nobody really even knew he was up there. Yeah. I mean, if one person had noticed, everybody would have known.
Yeah, absolutely.
And nobody noticed.
Yeah.
And then we invited Christian to come down, and he played one song, and then during that time where that was the pandemonium, they snuck Trey out the back door and all the way around the block, and he's like, I used to have to do this when I was gigging in New York. He's like, I love this. He's like, there was no way to the stage. We'd have to like go all the way around the block. So anyway, and then I said the surreal words, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Trey Anastasio, and I realized that I've never said those words in 20 years. And what a totally trippy feeling that was. Oh, yeah. He said it to me a million, like about me, right, a million times. And then he walked on stage and everyone freaked out. And then he, you know, we had a really nice couple songs together and people seemed to enjoy it.
Yeah, and I loved that it was your original music.
Yeah, it's important, I feel cool. Like, you know, so much. It's the same thing with the Super Jam. It's like you get really used to hearing a particular kind of music, or that it's kind of like the same covers over and over and over again, and I don't love that. I wish that original music was celebrated like we celebrate all the Super Jam catalog.
Like,
you know, I feel like sometimes, like I'll go to Jazz Fest. So, you know, we all go to Jazz Fest. All of us go to Jazz Fest. We play 2-3 gigs a day, sometimes not even at the fairgrounds. We're just like bouncing around doing whatever. And it's very cool. But people insist on having you do something that is somebody else's music.
Right.
They really want you to do something special for that night. And something special to many of those people means covering somebody else's, which to me is doing a disservice to the people who are working their asses off to write new music. And it's sort of like discrediting them a little bit. Like, you know, people really work really hard to make you new music and make themselves new music and rehearse it and tour it and learn it again, like the Ghost of the Forest stuff, get inside it, you know it really well. And then you do all this work and somebody's like, can you do a Bon Jovi tribute?
Right.
And you're like, do you? It's sort of like shocking to me. I was like, is that what we have become? You know what I mean?
And
like,
I think
just think about it.
It's a fairly recent development.
It's in the last 10 years,
yeah,
like, or maybe 7 or 8. Yeah. And I'm asking, I am challenging promoters and people who are putting these things together to think about that.
Yeah.
Think about the fact that when you ask me to do something that's so left, that's so far away from what I do on a daily basis, how that makes me feel. Like, it's sort of like you're telling me that I'm not good enough and my music isn't good enough. And I'm just giving you a different perspective on it, because I know that everybody loves to go to stuff like that and like, oh, I wonder what this is going to be. And there's, I'm not taking anything away from that. But I am asking for someone to just hear what I'm saying.
Absolutely. And I think it's something that I've talked about with a number of musicians, and I'm glad that we're doing this on the air, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because, and especially, you said Jazz Fest. That was exactly what I was thinking about. I went to my first Jazz Fest last year, and I liked the original music I heard more than these tributes.
Yeah.
That it's just enough already.
And we're
really scraping the bottom of the barrel with some of the musicians that were going for the tributes, because
like,
you want to be so,
well, that happened already.
Yeah.
Like 1976 happened.
Right.
1973 happened. It was amazing. Think about how amazing it was at the time.
Right.
You know, what's happening now? What are you doing to make people look back at 2019, 2020 and be like, holy shit, man, I saw this. Like, people weren't doing covers from 30 years ago at that point. So, like, what has changed? Why is it that we're so wrapped up in nostalgia? Like, who cares? It's there. It's always going to be there. You know what I mean? Like, celebrate the new stuff that's happening now and have the balls to like something that people don't know about yet, yeah, or people don't like. It's like people will like walk in, see a band that they've never seen before playing original music, and it's like, well, I don't know if I like this. Does my friend like this?
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. Form your own opinion. Like, stand up and say, this was cool. And like, it's okay. You know
I wonder
what I mean?
If it's the attention span social media has to do with it.
But like, there has to be a reversal because we can't keep going down this path.
No.
Like it's just, it's impossible.
We're going to be getting to Firehouse.
We're going to be the worst people ever.
The hair metal tribute show. And it's just enough.
Yeah. Anyway, I digress. Yes. Thank you for listening.
I feel strongly about it.
It's, you know, and I know I represent a lot of people when I say that, cause we talk about it all the time, you know, and what you guys see is the result of people paying really high top dollar to do some tribute that we don't necessarily want to be doing, but they know it'll sell, so they can offer us that money. Right. You know what I mean? And people won't offer you to do your own band that kind of loot.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
So, but within, I mean, like, we, everybody calls it Tribute Fest. We don't call it Jazz Fest. We're like, oh, you going down for Tribute Fest? I mean, that's what's happening. Right. So let's do something about it.
Absolutely.
Go support people who are doing their own shit, please. It's important and it's fun.
Exactly.
Go see stuff. Go see Ghost of the Forest, not knowing what it could possibly be.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
It's mind blowing to just have that experience. And,
how cool.
As I'm getting older, I'm liking that more and more, and having more and more respect for those type of things. And that's what this comes around to, what we're talking about with Lockin. I thought it was so great that Trey had Derek play on all his originals instead of
not playing, a mistake.
No.
Very purposeful.
Yes. Yes. Well, one last question, Jen. You, as I said at the beginning, you have sat in with nearly every major band in our scene, but out, whether it be in our scene or any, is there of any living musician that is in the realm of possibilities, is there some a band or musician that you would like to sit in with in the future?
It has to be within the realm of possibility.
I mean, not living. How about the, let's just keep
living.
It to living.
Oh, sure.
Let's
okay.
just keep it to living.
I think someone who has been super influential in my life, who is still like, just slaying notes that he shouldn't be able to slay, is Stevie Wonder. I would really love to play with Stevie Wonder. I will. I'm making that a thing. But that's in my plan for sure. Yeah. I'll sit in with Stevie Wonder.
If you're sitting and I'm Stevie Wonder and I said, what song would you like to duet with me on? What would you pick?
Summer Soft.
And that's, I knew you were going to go deep cut.
Deep cut. If you don't know it, check it out.
Summer soft wakes you up with a kiss to start the morning off. In the midst of herself playing Santa Claus, she brings gifts through her grave.
Oh, it's so good. I'm like getting all like Chills emotional about it right about now. It. Picturing our candlelit duet.
Yes.
Jennifer Hartswick, Stephen Wonder, at a grand piano in some jazz club near you, maybe during Jazz Fest.
Exactly, where it's actually Stevie playing his own
his
music.
Own music, yeah.
That would be okay.
That would be okay. It's his music. Exactly. And I'll just borrow it for a night.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much for your time, and it's always a pleasure chatting with you.
Yeah, you too, babe.
And folks can find you at Jay Hartswick on Instagram and Twitter, and Jennifer has her own Facebook page and whatnot. And
website with all the dates, jenniferhartswick.com. It's always up to date. Go check it out. Come see me. Come say hi.
There's also a site called Jambase that will have Jennifer's dates for you. So thank you for listening to the Jambase podcast.
Toodaloo.
That's it for this episode of the Jambase podcast. Thanks to Chad for sitting in on the rundown, and to Jennifer for the art of the sit-in. Be sure to subscribe to Jambase through your favorite podcast provider. We'd also like to give our appreciation to Jake Alexander for producing the episode, and his Clangin' and Bangin' project gives us the music. And that's it, and be sure to go see live music.